Welcome to NFB of Indiana. Today we are covering the topic of blind cricket. Of course, today is June 6, 2020. My name is Michael Loff, and today I'm in the background. I'm just going to run the technical stuff and turn it over to our host, who is working actively to start a blind cricket team in the United States, and we'll hear from people or active players and coaches and folks making it happen throughout the world. So at this point, I will turn it over to Brittany Montgomery.
All righty, guys. So thank you all for coming. I'm very excited about this. So in case you guys weren't able to look over the agenda, I just want to let you know that the meeting will be split up into about 10 minutes each for international guests, and then another 15 minutes Q&A session, and then the last 15 minutes will be an opportunity to reflect on actionable steps that we could take to bring cricket here. So I learned more about blind cricket through my travels. I've been to Europe, I've been to the Middle East and other parts of Asia. I have heard so many people talking about cricket. They'd be playing it in their backyards. My friends would disappear while they are at their cricket camps training for their competitions. I also met a lot of cricket players who actually attended my wedding reception back in 2018 when I was in Lahore, Pakistan. And I've also known people to be very creative in how they play cricket. For example, little children would be in their dorm rooms at the blind school crumpling up pieces of paper and using shoes as bats. So they're very passionate about cricket. You know, I've seen how it has actually shaped people's lives, especially when you think about how blindness is perceived in other parts of the world compared to the United States. Cricket has become their independence in a lot of ways. My husband has been a cricket player since 2008, and that's why we thought that it would be very interesting to bring cricket to the U.S. Since it's not so traditional. It would be interesting to get that started, and not only as a game for fun, but also to establish an entire cross-cultural aspect to it as well. So to get us started, we'll just go ahead and start with our first international guest. Hassan, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us where you're from, and go ahead and just give us a quick overview of how the game is played.
Okay. Hi, guys. My name is Hassan Khan. Just before I do go on to my spiel, I just want to say, look, I had this conversation about blind cricket with Brittany about 3 weeks ago, so it's a real honor being here. You guys could be an integral part of something that could be really quite special. And I want to say if, but I'm going to say when this project takes off, you are all going to be trailblazers. And don't forget, this is actually happening during a pandemic. So yeah, thank you for having me. I'm Hassan Khan. I live in England, born and bred in Pakistan, but I'll come on to that. Let me talk to you about cricket. Now, cricket, there are a lot of rules. I'm not going to be able to cover all of them. And those that I miss out, I know people, our guest speakers, may be able to cover some of it. But I'm going to go through some of the basic rules of blind cricket. So blind cricket comprises of a team of 11 players. You have a maximum of 4 B1s. These are players who are totally blind and wear blacked out shades. You then have 4 B2s. Now, these are partially blind players who can see up to 5 degrees. Then you have your partially sighted players who are B3s and can see less than 20 degrees in the better eye. The major difference with this game is that it's obviously the ball. It's a small, almost like a tennis-sized white ball that has ball bearings in, which allows blind and partially sighted people to hear the ball. It's a very hard plastic ball, and it sounds like an annoying baby's rattle, but I welcome the sound right now. And that is what it sounds like. The game actually follows the MCC rules, so a lot of the rules are similar. However, where the game differs is for some of the categories. So a B1 player is obviously totally blind. However, our runs, everything we score is doubled. We can actually take a catch on the bounce, one bounce. We also get a runner during the game due to health and safety. It is a very fast-moving game with about 11 men and women on the field, including the batswomen and batsmen. It can get hectic. The ball has to bounce twice before it reaches the batsman or batswoman. And there are other rules to ensure that if that doesn't happen, then there are penalties. So there are two formats in international blind cricket right now. The first one is a 40 over game. And when I talk about overs, that's basically in an over, you have six legal balls. So imagine in baseball, you pitch six times. If you pitch six perfect balls, that consists of an over. So it consists of 40 overs, and that's about 6 hours, 3 hours per side. That doesn't include a lunch break. Then you have a shorter game, the 2020 format. That's when each team gets 20 overs. So that's about 120 balls. And that is 90 minutes per side. The other thing that you do in blind cricket is, how does a batsman know you're about to bowl? So you say, ready batsman. And then as you release the ball, you say, play. Again, not being late with a call or not doing so will lead to a penalty. There are several ways of getting out in blind cricket, and they apply they follow the mainstream game. I could talk to you about these rules till the cows come home, but there are a lot of rules out there, and you can look them up on YouTube, but we'll obviously happily feed you some other rules through this meeting and in the future. But these are some of the basics of blind cricket. So let me tell you a little bit about how I started my life. I guess my sight loss journey. I was born and bred in Pakistan, in a district of 200 to 300 people, at least in my village anyways. And I woke up one morning at the age of three, and my parents had discovered that I'd lost sight in both eyes. 6 years later, after I'd been what felt like being imprisoned in my own walls, because I had no education to talk of. The nearest blind school was about 7 or 8 hours away, so that wasn't a possibility for me at the time. I was struggling with life. I knew that my potential in life was potentially to be a beggar, because that was reality at the time. People said to me that, you know, if your parents pass on, well, we can't see you doing anything in your life, because you have no education, you have no friends, you don't have any entertainment to speak of, certainly not cricket or any sport. I mean, my cousins, my uncles would play cricket, but it's something I couldn't do. I was told, you're blind, you cannot pick up a bat. And that's the belief that I followed. 6 years later, as I said, my sister then had a migraine attack and subsequently lost half of her sight. This then set a reaction in my dad, and he decided to come to England to have us checked. And that actually then led us to stay here. I then started my education at the age of 10, where I had to learn English, Braille, you name it. However, I felt like there was something missing, and that was, of course, cricket. At the age of 17, my school was approached by a local club in London who were looking for young blind cricketers. I went along and gave trials, and actually the first trial was at Lord's, which is probably the best ground you could. It's the most prestigious venue that a cricketer could play the cricket at, and I was going there at the age of 16, 17. Then they said, look, we want to invite you to this net session, which is effectively the training session. And I went along, and there was these 30, 40, 50 year olds playing cricket at a level I had never experienced. Not only that, I was an impressionable young man who hadn't actually traveled on my own, and this was the first time I'd actually stepped onto a train. And these guys are talking about their lives, their jobs, their wives, and I never thought it was possible to lead a life as a normal person. And that was my reality. And suddenly I'd entered a new type of school. I thought I'd never get the call again. I thought it was a training, they're ticking boxes. A week later, I found myself playing for the Metro Blind cricket team with these 30, 40, 50 year olds. Cut a very, very long story short, 2 years later, I found myself making my debut for the England Blind cricket team, which I never thought existed, at the age of 19 in Sri Lanka. And it really has been a fulfilling journey, because cricket has been a vehicle which has led to full-time employment. It has led for me to attend, I've played in 3 World Cups at a world stage. I've played in something called the Ashes, which is a trophy that's contested between England and Australia, and it goes back to, 100 or 200 years. I don't know my history. I just play the game. I went down to Australia in 2016 and won the Ashes. We haven't really had too many achievements in the World Cup, because India and Pakistan are the best teams in the World Cups. But my life would not be at the stage it is but for cricket, and the people that I've met. You know, I go and play cricket in England, you'd assume that everyone's from the same same culture. Absolutely not. The 11 boys and girls that I play with, everyone's got a different story. Everyone's got a different language. Everyone's got a different way of working. And it has opened my eyes to something I never thought. You got to remember, at the age of 9, I gave up and I thought I was going to be a beggar. Sitting here now in London, I've now played for my country 30 times. I'm employed by a prestigious charity in England. And it really isn't about me. It's about what opportunities I've had. And the reason I hung on to this and I've come along to this meeting is because I actually tried to take blind cricket to New York in 2009. For one reason or another, it just didn't work. I just think this time I have hope in my heart. With the delegates that we've got online right now, the participants, with Brittany in Indiana, Ohio, with Riley, I just feel like we have the potential to have a team in the US that could compete at a local level and certainly one day at an international level. That's my hope.
Thank you so much, Hassan. That was a great overview and introduction and your involvement in cricket. Aksa, why don't we go ahead and move to you? Why don't you give us a brief introduction of yourself and your involvement in cricket, some of your greatest achievements, and why you would like to see cricket brought here to the US?
Hello, everybody. This is Aksa Arif here from a city called Multan and country Pakistan. So I have completed my bachelor's in applied language and linguistics from Kincaid College. So about cricket, it was my passion. It was my passion to play, but I couldn't make it 14. So when I was, I could see at that time I was playing basketball. I used to play basketball and cricket in my childhood. And later on, when I lost my sight, everything was changed for me. And I lost my sight due to an accident, and which was I was playing basketball in my school. And in a tournament, in that tournament, I lost my sight, and if the ball hit to my retina, and I lost my sight. So the story, long story cut short. So I just completed my bachelor somehow back in 2019, and during my college days, during my college education, when I was looking for some sports which I can roam around, I can make friends, I can explore the cultures, different people. So I was looking for some games, like outdoor games, which I can play with the people and learn something new, and always wanted to make myself independent. So cricket is the most important part of my life. It totally changed my life. When I was studying in my college, I just had some information that some trials are going to take place for World International First Women Blind Cricket Series. So, which was the great effort of put by Syed Sultan Shah, who is the chairperson of Pakistan Blind Cricket Council. So he was the one who gave us its opportunity to prove of ourselves, especially like in developing country like Pakistan. He introduced men's cricket, and after that he introduced women blind cricket and that was a great news for people like me, because we were getting education and all that, but nobody thought about our sports or like our physical activities. But he was the one who put lots of effort to make our team, and then he just went some trials in Lahore and well-known college that is called Kincaid College and other part of the country. So like I was like I want to give my trial, and the auditions for the trial and everything was closed, and I requested to my head of department, and she said that what you have different among all the players that you can prove yourself. And I just told them that you have the players which they have selected among 200 in the selection list. So like I am a player who can use left arm, and I can be the weapon they can use, because people usually play with their right hand. So this idea was clicked into my HOD's head, and she let me go for a trial, and that's how I went to so many trials. And later on our I got some trainings in a city called Ahmedabad in 2018. And then we have long trainings, long sessions about trekking, and very long practice. And in that practice, we came across so many different cities. We have explored approximately whole of Pakistan, and we have learned a lot about cricket. We all the players who are V1, V2, V3, like who are partially blind and totally blind people, we have explored a lot in the field of cricket. So we have learned a lot. In 2019, in January and February, the Nepal's team came into Pakistan, and we had a 2020 series which was containing 5 matches, and I was the part of that cricket. I was the part of those. My achievement in that game was that I was among all, like in 5 those matches, I was selected in the international team, which was representing very first time in the history of blind women cricket, which was held recognized in Pakistan, and I have played against the Nepal.
Okay, Aksa, and why would you like to see cricket, blind cricket, brought to the U.S.?
Okay, this was my really big interest, because like if Pakistan, which is a developing country, and like a country like U.S., which is for sure developed country, if our nation, if Pakistan can make it, so I really want that my U.S. also should take initiative for the women who are visually impaired. They should make a cricket, not only U.S. I think so it should be in across the world, because the women of different countries, they will interact, they will have a social, and they will have more confidence, their cultural barriers and everything they will get about, they get information. And the most important thing, the women will get more motivated and they will have better outcome.
I know I'm not supposed to chime in here, but I didn't add this, Brittany, sorry. But the other important thing is that it's not a Paralympian sport, because there are not enough teams playing. So the more teams that we have playing, you never know, this might become a Paralympic sport.
Exactly. That's what I want. I wanted to say that if Pakistan, England, America, and other, if only there is one country who is representing internationally, we need more and more countries to represent, and the game should be like forever, and not for the only for single match.
Oh yeah, okay, thank you so much, Aksa. Okay, let's move on to our last international guest. Tarek, go ahead and introduce yourself and let us know your involvement in cricket, some of your greatest achievements, and also why you would like to see it brought to other parts of the world.
Good evening or good afternoon, everybody. Thank you very much for having me on. It's a great honor for me to be part of this, to be asked by Hassan and by Brittany part of this. I am from South Africa. I am currently the assistant coach to the South African national team. My involvement with blind cricket, and let me just say that I'm fully sighted. I have got no visual impairments at all. But I started off as a normal cricket umpire in sighted cricket. And in 2010, Pakistan toured, blind cricket team toured South Africa for the first time in, I think, 8 years. Or 10 years, and I was asked to umpire. And when I was told it's blind cricket, naturally I had heard about blind cricket, but I'd never seen it played. I had basically no idea what the laws were about, how it was played. But played my first game at the international level, and I was hooked. The experience changed my life to see the level that these guys played at and the passion that these guys had for the game. And from then, it's basically I've been involved with blind cricket. I then went on to umpire in several of our national tournaments. In 2014, the Blind Cricket World Cup was hosted in Cape Town in South Africa, and I was fortunate enough that I was appointed to umpire in the final of that World Cup between Pakistan and India, which for as much as it is for players to play in the final of a World Cup and represent their country, just as much for an umpire to be able to represent their country and stand in the final of the World Cup. In 2017, a friend of mine, then the late Sonwabile Bila, became president of Blind South Africa. He contacted me and said, listen, we've had so many discussions. I want you to come on board and come and help us. And the first thing we did then was obviously create social media pages. Because blind cricket is not a very well-known sport, I suppose like many disability sports in South Africa, it doesn't get the media attention or the coverage that it should. And we started off with a Facebook and Twitter account. The Twitter account was basically aimed at media. We got a lot of followers that are journalists, cricket journalists. And from there, it's the coverage that we've got out of that has been immense. We've gone in pretty much 2 years since the account has started to having done so many TV interviews, to getting the game out there, to having so many people know what's going on. All of a sudden, blind cricket games in South Africa at national level is being broadcast live over the internet. Earlier this year in February, we played our first home series since 2010 against New Zealand. In Cape Town, those games were all live broadcast over the Cricket South Africa YouTube channel, and we also did a bit of commentary on there. Blind cricket has, to an extent, taken over my life. I told Brittany that I've got 10 minutes to talk about it here. I've had to work really hard to try and cut it down to 10 minutes because I can talk for hours about the game. So basically, it's just, for me, it has totally changed my life. It has changed my outlook on life. It has changed how I see things. I've become very good friends with a lot of the players throughout the country. We are fortunate that in the, I think, 24 years the blind cricket has been played in South Africa now, we have won a World Cup in 1998. We lost the final in 2002 against Pakistan. And we've gone a long way. We're not where we want to be, but it's part of growing. And like Aksa said and Hassan said, the game should grow at a bigger level internationally. I think currently there are 9 countries playing blind cricket. Ultimately, we wanted to get up to 15, 16, 17 countries playing. And for me, the US, I think because of the size of the country and because of the different cultures that you've got there, I totally believe that blind cricket is something that can take off there. I think that if we plan it properly and if you introduce it, you are fortunate that you do have a large subcontinent population that know the game or that knows about cricket or knows what cricket is, and I'm pretty sure that we can move on from there. The facilities are already in most cities in the USA. Sighted cricket is taking off there. So to get facilities is not a problem. There are fields available. There is equipment available. It is just basically to get it going and get it started. So from a personal point of view, I would love to see other countries come to the fore, other countries participate in World Cups, participate in international events. The game is in South Africa one of the fastest growing disability sports. We have probably more people playing blind cricket than any other blind sport in the country. It has changed my life. I've totally walked away from sighted cricket. I am only doing blind cricket at the moment. It is just something that I am very passionate about, and I'm very, very hopeful for the future of the game, not just with the normal countries that's being played, but with growing the game, starting in America, and taking it to whatever levels it can take there. And I'm pretty sure with the amount of people you've got there, you could actually in a couple of years, if we really put work in, be competitive at international level. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Tariq. So what we're going to do now is just take about 15 minutes to ask questions to our international guests. So if anybody has questions now, go ahead and you can unmute yourself and ask, and then mute yourself back when they're answering, please.
Yeah, what I would suggest is that people just state their first name, and then you can call on them. If you are muted, maybe because you made noise, just raise your hand and we can call you there as well. I believe Ron.
I want to ask your guest if the men play with the women, or does the women have a separate league themselves?
In the UK, we have an England team, which is funded by the English Cricket Board. So that's who funds the main cricket team. They say that it's a mixed team, so women can play in that team. However, we've not had a woman play for the England blind cricket team. However, there's a UK ladies team, a VI ladies team, that's not funded by anyone. So they fund themselves. I believe you're now starting to see unique VI women cricket teams, some funded by boards and some funded by other charities. So you have a team in Pakistan, you have a team in Nepal, you have a team in England, but that's not funded. You're starting to see teams in India. I believe there are other countries that are looking at it.
I know the West Indies also have a ladies team. I think the UK team,
of course,
played played in the West Indies. So there is cricket there in the West Indies. Yes. In South Africa, we're not at a financial level where we can have a ladies team as yet. But we do have ladies playing the game, and they do play, represent their state teams. It is mixed, so the ladies can play with the men. And we actually have a few ladies that do play the game with the men's team. So yeah, you can play mixed, the game mixed, and if you have the resources, you can separate it and have a ladies team and a men's.
We do in our leagues. In our leagues, we've got women who are captains and vice captains. That's mixed.
Well, before international series in Pakistan, women were playing with men as well. And in Nepal, like country like Nepal, and they were having representative as women in international blind women team. There were women as well who were playing cricket. So in the initiate level, there is no harm playing women cricket with men. Pakistan and Nepal played the cricket series. That was totally women team.
This is Jim Debus from Columbus, Ohio. So you mentioned it is 16 people at minimum to play. Is that correct?
11 per side.
Could you host a practice or scrimmage with less people? I guess let's start there. I mean, could you have a 5-on-5? Does that work?
Yes. When you say practice, I mean, we've done practice matches, or you can practice in twos if you wanted to.
Exactly. Between two people, one can be a bowler and one can be a batsman.
Again, we fall under the NCC laws there where to play an official match, you have to have a minimum of 7 players in a team. And then obviously you just need to rework then the B1, B2 and B3 sections of that. But you can have an official match with a minimum of 7 players assigned.
The equipment that you need and just what a practice looks like in terms of maybe drills, things like that. Like what skills are being worked on in a traditional practice?
So basically we pretty much work to an extent the exact same way as normal cricket would work. We would have what is called a net session where we will have the guys that are bowling and we will have batsmen batting. For the bowlers, it's pretty much they just need a ball to bowl. We don't, like American baseball, we don't have gloves. There's only one person on the field, on the fielding side that will wear gloves, and that's the wicketkeeper that stands behind the stumps. Everybody else will just use their normal hands with no gloves. Batsmen will have a bat. They can have leg guards and they must have gloves on each hand, and they can choose whether they want to wear a helmet or not. So the training sessions will basically be guys batting, teaching them how to bat. Majority of your B1 player shot is what we call a sweep shot. Your B2s and your B3s will play more with straight bats and sweep shots, but that depends on the skill level of your B1 player as well. And then in terms of fielding drills, we use the ball that makes a noise, and we have there's several fielding drills that you can do with fielding, catching, there you go. Fielding, catching, throwing the ball in, teaching how to throw in. Obviously, it's a little bit different with the wicketkeeper would normally be your strongest B3 so that he can shout out directions to where the ball is, and then the directions will come from him where the ball must be thrown to, what end it must be thrown to, and the guys will listen to the sound of his calls to determine which side to throw the ball. So it's skills like that we work on. There's a whole bunch of different skills that you can do to enhance the game. But again, it's pretty basic to start off with. It doesn't take rocket science to actually get it going.
Is this documented somewhere? Has somebody created some sort of what drills would look like and things like that?
Like a coaching handbook. Is that what you're trying
yes.
to say?
Thank you. Yes.
Basically, what we have in South Africa, and I think it's country dependent. Every coach and the actual head coach of the South African team is listening in on this, Michael. But every head coach basically has his own drills and has his own system of doing drills. I'm not sure. Look, we're quite keen if anybody needs to help with this or wants information on it, we're very keen to put it down in paper for you and send it through to you. We've got no problem doing that at all. But again, like I said, it's coach dependent, it's country dependent. There's so many different drills that you can do that you can go and basically try and work out your own type of drills that you want to do as well. It's not set in paper that is exactly how it must be done and you can only do it that way. It's what you feel a player needs or what you see how a player works or whatever the case may be. There is normal cricket coaching courses that you can do, and you can implement, because blind cricket and normal cricket is so similar that you can implement many of the sighted cricket training sessions and drills into blind cricket because it is so, it is pretty much simple. There's a very, very small percentage that is different to normal.
We have some YouTube videos of how a B1, a B2, a B3 bats, bowls, or fields. But yeah, you're actually, that's a really good point. There isn't really a written handbook as such. There are rules and regulations we can obviously share with you, but not a handbook, because everyone's skills are different and everyone wants to learn different things.
Because cricket constantly evolves, guys learn different shots, they learn different bowling techniques, they've got different fielding techniques, and it constantly evolves. You can't just keep on playing the same kind of shot because the bowler will work you out. So and you can't keep bowling the same type of ball because a batsman will work you out. So the batsmen are constantly bringing in new shots and evolving, and they'll come to a coach and they'll say, listen, I want to try this, can you help me with this? Or a bowler will come in and say, listen, I want to try bowling a different type of a ball, whether it be a slow ball or a top spinner or whatever the case may be. And so this is the beauty of the game, that it constantly evolves. It doesn't, you've got your basics there, but you can keep on improvising and you can keep on changing the way you play and the way you bowl and the way you bat.
That's the beauty of it. Yeah, sorry, it was Katie next.
Yeah, so there's a few things, and I might be getting into our next few minutes on just action steps as well. But when I think of a cricket in the U.S., I know compared to goal ball or soccer, some of the bigger, or beat baseball, some of the bigger games, it's because our culture is surrounded by those games, correct? Same with England. That's why this is so huge, is because this is a culture that's been developed over years from the sighted world and then bringing it into the visually impaired world. So when I think of cricket, I see it as kind of like bocce, just a backyard game, things of that nature that we can get involved, which I think adheres to the advantage because it can be a recreational and elite sport per se. But I know as an individual from the U.S. and other people on this call, please jump in. I don't know enough about it. I've seen it played. I just don't know enough to say that I can adequately just teach this sport, even while looking at the rules. There were so many rules. So I definitely think if this is going to get further, we would need professionals such as yourself to come and at least do a clinic or something to get this started. I think it's incredible, the women and men's team, when you all were talking about separation, of course it starts with men and women, and then you can get, as more individuals are involved, you can spread out in between separation of teams, but we definitely have to get it started at some level. And then I had two questions. Paralympic wise, I know you said there's 9 teams, I think, and I just didn't know how many teams it would take to become a Paralympic sport. And then equipment doesn't seem like it'd be hard to find. But if at the end of this, we could have links to all of the equipment to buy for purchase or where we could get it, that'd be incredible.
This is Imran Ahmed from Denver, Colorado. And I would just like to add, as far as like putting together a clinic, we actually have enough players who have a very good understanding of cricket, because I'm originally from Pakistan as well. And there are quite a few of us who are from Pakistan, and we have played cricket in one form or another in the past. So we have most of the equipment as well, because I have several cricket balls that I brought from Pakistan. So we could definitely get this started quickly.
Your point about us, effectively showing you how to play the game, you already have resources there, I believe. But my aim is essentially to have that scenario where team that I play for, I envisage them some point in a year maybe coming out, hanging out with you guys, having a drink with you, and effectively not just showing you how to play cricket, playing cricket with you.
Yeah. We do have a raised hand from Lee Martin.
I would like to know, what is the average cost to finance a cricket team?
Yeah, it will vary from country to country. Cricket equipment by itself, you don't need as much equipment for a blind team as you would need for a sighted team. The stumps are pretty easy to make. You can make them yourself. You just need to get the specifications, so they're not very expensive. The balls, unfortunately, I think Imran that said it? He's brought some balls from Pakistan. Balls are not freely available all over the country. They've got to come either from India or Pakistan, because it's specifically designed for blind cricket, and they're only available in those countries. But again, they're not very expensive to import. Cost-wise and dollar-wise, I can't tell you exactly what it would cost. But if you go and have a look at it, I mean, basically clothing, to start it off with, everybody can just wear whatever they want to wear. You don't need specific shoes. They can just wear a normal pair of sneakers. If it's in the summer, they can just play with shorts and a sweatshirt or whatever the case may be.
Lee Martin, this is Imran. Mm-hmm. If you are trying to compare it to B baseball, the costs are far more manageable and minimal, I would say, because a B ball costs $35 and is far more fragile compared to a cricket ball. And if you are bringing a cricket ball from Pakistan, you can get it for a couple of dollars.
The balls are not that expensive to bring in. And bats, whatever. Look, I'm not sure what the prices go for in the US, but effectively in South Africa, if you have to revert it dollar-wise, you can get a decent bat for probably about $30.
Even cheaper,
But something decent.
Especially if you have like contacts in like countries like India or Pakistan, England, you know, you can actually get those imported pretty cheaply.
But someone said, can we have links to equipment? That's something we can look at.
Yeah, that's not issue because I'm from Pakistan and I am in contact with people who can ship these balls are to US country like US. So like it's not a big issue if you talk about equipment. If we have a sponsor, who can financially give a quote to US, bringing cricket things to US. So bringing from Pakistan to US is not issue if somebody sponsor from here, from there, I mean to say.
One thing that I would love to add, and like, you know, because I played B baseball, because that was the closest thing I could find in the US when I moved here. And thanks to Ron Brown and some of the other folks in Indiana, I played B ball for about 5-6 years. But cricket has always been my passion. And I would say, actually, compared to B baseball, blind people can get far more involved. There is far less dependence on sighted people when you're playing blind cricket compared to B baseball.
It is one of the unique sports where all three categories are playing at the same time in the same field.
You don't have to have sighted batters, you don't have to have a sighted catcher, you don't have to have a sighted pitcher. So it's actually makes it far more interesting and competitive and get a lot more blind people involved.
It sounds like it's more of an individual sport than a competition sport. Is that correct or not correct? Are you playing against each other in competition, or are you playing as an individual?
You're definitely playing in a team.
It's 11 players per team. What makes cricket unique, very similar to baseball, I would say, is that it is a team of 11 players where you play as a team, but every person, when he does what he needs to do, he does it individually. So a batsman bats by himself. He gets no help from anybody. He gets no directions from anybody. When he hits the ball, it's purely about him listening for the ball and hitting the ball and scoring the runs. When the bowler bowls, it's basically him, and then the fielders have to pick up the balls themselves or whatever. So it is a team. Whatever runs gets accumulated goes into a team format, but individual runs are scored by a batsman, and that accumulates then into a team format. And the team batting second has to get at least one run more than what the team batting first got in a specific time to win the game. So yes, it is a team game played by individuals, if that makes sense. Other than its international level, in South Africa, what we've got is, we call them provinces, I would presume in America we call them states. We have a national tournament every year that takes about 4 to 5 days. Six big states playing at the moment. We're working on another two that will join. They were supposed to join this year, but because of Corona, everything has been pushed over to next year. So we have, and that's a competition where the guys play for trophies. They play for first place, second place, and then from there, we select a national team to represent South Africa. South Africa, earlier in the year, in February, had a series against New Zealand where we played 5 T20 internationals and 2 40-over internationals. And then, obviously, we're building up to the World Cup, which, if possible, will hopefully be next year.
Yeah, and in the UK, so we're in the UK quickly, we compete for 6 trophies between development clubs and the mainstream clubs. And effectively, in summary, what everyone said, individuals performing to help a team.
How has cricket enhance the lives of the blind around the world as far as employment, as far as status in your country? Can you give me some observations on that?
We've got 20 players in the England squad, 18 of which are working. The other two are, I think, retired. We have, some of the players have been awarded CBEs, MBEs. These are awards handed by the Queen. I myself would pick up quite a lot of exposure in the media, radio interviews, TV interviews, because of my story and because of me being born in Pakistan. But for cricket, a lot of us would may not be doing anything with our lives. It's been an enabler. And I think that, you know, you may feel that you might have everything, but once we come and see you, hopefully in a year.
LaRon Carter.
I'm wondering about the bat itself. Like, what kind of bat is it? Is it a special bat? Does it have a flat side to it? And what is the objective of the hitter while they're at the plate? Like, can you take us through that sequence on what they're trying to accomplish?
The bat is different to what your baseball is. The way the baseball bat is cylindrical, it's round. The cricket bat is flatter. It's got a flat surface on the one side. It just gives you a little bit of a bigger hitting surface. The dimensions of the bat you can get on the internet. I can't tell you exactly how wide it is. The objective of a batsman is pretty simple. Look, first of all, he doesn't want to get out, and he needs to score runs. So the way runs are scored in cricket, you can score runs 360 degrees around you, all around the field. The pitch is in the middle of the field. Boundaries at international level is about 50 meters away. To score four runs, the ball has to be hit on the ground over the boundary. To score a six, it's got to go through the air over the boundary. That's the maximum hit that you can get. If they hit it into the field and they run from one wicket to the other side, that is called one run. If they do that twice, two runs. So that ultimately, it's not just hitting the ball and then with I would presume people, I haven't seen people, but I presume it's similar to baseball, where you just run to the one base, and you can't hit behind you because then it becomes a foul ball. This is basically 360 degrees, and you can hit it anywhere in that 360.
Okay, John Moore has a question. Go ahead, sir.
Do you anticipate two innings test matches ever happening on the international stage, like in sighted cricket? And if so, I know I probably could not play this game because I'm severely hearing impaired, and I would probably get more outs than wickets or runs. But I would still like to at least give it a try. And if this were to take place, but for people that work, having to request time off even for ODIs, and if test matches ever happen, how would that work, and do you anticipate multi-day test matches even becoming mainstream at the international level?
I don't for now. It has been trialed.
South Africa and Pakistan, Haroon, if you'll probably know 100%, but if my memory serves me correct, Pakistan and South Africa actually played a three-day test match series back in 2000. It's not something that I think that they're really looking at the moment, because like you said, it's very time-consuming. It does take a lot of time to do that. So the T20 and the 40-over format is probably the best way to do it. And the most entertaining way to do it.
You can play this game in relative darkness. You can play in the evenings as well.
Yeah. And also, if I can touch on the hearing impaired, John, I don't see why you couldn't be a devastating bowler. You can bowl. If you can bowl straight, well, there you go.
Hassan, just very quickly, two of the guys, England players that I think is two brothers, that played in the 2014 World Cup also had hearing difficulties, didn't they?
Gavin Dean and Matt Dean are both hearing impaired as visually impaired. And Matt Dean is one of the best England cricketers around.
Once you hit the ball, you run back and forth between these two things, and each time you hit one of the two things to turn around, you score a run. Is that right?
That's the simple version of it. It's basically hit the ball. A cricket pitch is pretty much, it's 22 yards long. Wickets are at the end of it. Wickets is basically, inside the cricket, it's three wooden poles with two wooden pieces on top of it that you need to protect. If the ball hits that, you are out. Well, that's one of the ways to go out. In blind cricket, we use a set of metal stumps because you can't have the stuff flying all over the place and hurting people. So it's a set of metal stumps that are sitting on either end of the pitch, and you've got to run basically from where you stood when you hit the ball to the other end, and the other batsmen on the other end will stand there. If you run one run, you off strike, and the new batsman will be on strike. If
you have two batsmen. Sorry, go on.
Yeah.
Oh, so two people are batting at a time?
At one time, yeah. Always
so,
two batsmen.
So one will be on strike, and one will be the non-striker. So the striker, obviously, is the one that will hit the ball. And if they only run one, then he will become the non-striker, and the non-striker will become the striker. But if they run two, he gets back to the end that he was originally.
Hey, this is Imran. Yeah, one interesting fact I would like to add, because I play baseball a lot, so I understand some of the concerns or thinking that people might have in their heads. So like, when you hit the ball really well eventually in baseball and it ends up being a foul, it's actually very demoralizing for a batter. In cricket, every shot counts. You can hit the ball anywhere. There is no foul. Every hit matters.
Sounds like you're in the very middle of the pitch when you hit it.
At the end of the over, over, if you haven't scored runs, you then swap batters for the next over. So it's constantly moving, and you're thinking on your feet. And just to explain, the B1 runner, so the B1 runner, you hit the ball, but you have a runner who's talking to you and saying, look, there's the field, you want to avoid him, you want to avoid her, hit the ball there if you want, and then they'll run for you.
I gotcha.
So it's a partnership.
It's much easier when you're actually on the field when someone explains it.
Baseball, and a cricket comparison. So, as you know, baseball has three bases, but cricket compared to baseball has two bases, and two people was standing each base. Whenever they do run, they exchange the bases, basically. So to avoid collapsing, they just they know what side they have to run through, left or right.
In baseball, if you hit the ball, you have to run, don't you?
Yes.
In cricket,
you don't have to.
Yeah, yes. There's a strategy in cricket. There's a lot of strategy and tactics. And if you miss a ball in baby baseball, it actually counts against you. In cricket, you can intentionally let the ball go.
There is a very good book that helped me when I was first getting into TMS. Julian Knight wrote a really good book called Cricket for Dummies. It's available on Bookshare. And he does a very, very good job at laying down the rules of the game in plain language. He does a very good job with it. He's very detailed. And I highly recommend that book to anyone that wants to really to go in depth.
I am just curious, how did the cricket teams get started in the other countries?
I will explain about Pakistan. Women teams, usually they came to colleges. They went to the blind schools where they have lots of community living together, especially blind community. So they went there, they took trials over there, and then they made practice and they play, and then they made a team.
How about the country that has nothing to do with cricket?
So England took the game to South Africa. I mean, they were passionately already playing, but we toured South Africa in 96, just like I'm suggesting. They went into a specialist school, they gathered people from a city and introduced the game of blind cricket via coaching, via playing, just hanging out with them. Similarly with the West Indies in 2002. Those countries were already playing the game and are passionate. My aim at the end of this call is to go away, speak to the CEO of Metro Blind Sport, the club I play for, and say, look, we've had this call. If we put in the hard work and the legwork, can we fundraise a few good coaches and a few players to go out to Indiana and Ohio? Can we do a four-day training camp? That's my idea. There's a lot of talking to do, a lot of meeting to do before that. That's my idea.
I think we have to see where we can find cricket ground in America.
We actually have a cricket stadium, an international cricket stadium in Indianapolis.
You guys need to link in with your rehab officers.
Yeah, because we can secure a lot of the equipment from the sided cricket clubs as well.
If you all are interested, we can talk to there is a Pakistani Indian community here that play cricket every weekend to the ground that Imran is talking about. We can approach them.
I think America is fortunate at this stage that mainstream cricket is starting to take off. So there's a lot more facilities and a lot more clubs starting up and the game being played there. And as I said earlier, as much as you want to bring this across culture and you want to bring everybody involved, I think to get it started and to let people be able to see what it is, you guys are in a unique position that you have a very large community that already knows what cricket is and how cricket is being played. And for me, it's always about once it starts, you'll get new people, you'll get people joining, you'll get people starting to play when they start realizing what's going on. But very important is that people need to be aware of what's going on. You need to market this to get it into the media. Important that you raise awareness of the game. 2 years ago, blind cricket in South Africa, very few people knew about it. Very few people knew how it works. We started with an aggressive media campaign and marketing the game and raising awareness. And 2 years later, as I said in my talk, we're at a level where people are, the guys walking the streets and they look and say, oh, we saw you on the internet. We saw you play. Or the guys walking the streets, congratulations on beating that. Stuff like that, because the awareness has been raised. If people don't know about it, they're not going to help you. If they start seeing what's going on, we, for the first time since we started playing blind cricket in 96, for the first time this year, the national team got an official clothing sponsor, a really big company here. And that, I mean, they pretty much sponsored all our playing kits, our training kits, track suits, golf shirts. And it's something that's never happened. But because of the awareness that we've raised, there's now opportunity for sponsors to come in because they're going to get something out of it.
I mean, in the next 365 days, we have got to, I keep saying, put in the legwork. But you, I think Katie said that, you know, they've got to have coaches, and that's all fair enough. We will come down, hopefully. But actually, a game of cricket is simple. You know, you could get someone like Imran Wajib, Brittany's husband, who has played cricket, so has skills he can pass on to you. There's no reason why you couldn't hold your camps in the once this lockdown's over amongst yourselves.
I agree.
Brittany, I think a committee is the way forward.
Hey, this is Daniel Belding from Indiana, and Brittany, I was wondering if you've been in contact at all with the United States Association of Blind Athletes out in Colorado Springs, and asked them about anything with assistance for networking or just using them as a resource for blind athletes to introduce them to blind cricket.
I actually talked to Lou Moneymaker, who is one of the founders of USABA, and he actually talked to the executive director, and it was the executive director said that, you know, he's not aware of any cricket team ever being created, and didn't know a lot about cricket, you know, I think that that's the idea that it's like never been started before is just, it's, you know, it really would motivate us even more to get this going, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I know for us with blind hockey, we contacted USABA, and we're not a USABA sanctioned sport, but they still provide a link on their website for us as one of the disabled sports for the blind. That way people can gather. I don't know if we could talk to them about putting a link.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Is that way to get more information out?
This is Riley. I actually have a question for Daniel, being basically starting a hockey team from scratch in Indiana. How did you find, I guess, some kind of experienced blind? Did you know an experienced blind hockey player to begin with who could kind of go over the rules and do all of those types of things? Or like, did you find someone to kind of coach the team? I mean, how did that work for you in terms of finding someone to kind of coach, I guess, because that's where it's going to be a little bit difficult in Ohio, because we don't have, you know, the Imrans and Ikram and Mujib. You know, I don't really know anybody in Ohio at the moment who's been experienced with cricket and can kind of work with us on that. But I mean, I guess we could always go to Indiana and, you know, learn that way. Yes. From experienced players as well. So I mean, that's also an option, but kind of a question and an observation at the same time. So
yeah, I mean, for me, I started the helped start the program, blind hockey program, in Colorado as well. And you know, hockey is obviously a pretty prevalent sport in the United States, so we were able to reach out to you know, college athletes and college players, former college players that wanted to come out and help and coach the team out there in Colorado, and that's kind of how they've been able to establish their coaching system there. I actually am the I grew up playing hockey, so I'm very familiar with it, and I play on the U.S. national team as well. So I coach and play for our team here in Indiana. We recruited volunteers just from the local hockey community. I went around to the different ice rinks and talked with coaches, just went out to practice sessions and kind of just spread the word about blind hockey. I think the best way is, like some have mentioned, if there are any local communities that are playing cricket, just to go talk with them. And yep. Most of the time, most people are passionate enough about their sport that they're more than happy to come out and volunteer, you know, afternoon of their time to help coach. And people like getting involved in the disabled sports. It's a whole different aspect of the game, and they're really, I think it's surprisingly easy to find volunteers that want to come out that have already experienced playing the sport or are passionate about it.
Yeah, thank you.
I mean, you almost you may not have someone blind in Ohio, but there might be a few people from the Asian community who might want to come out to you and to say, oh, I will throw a few balls to you, we'll show you how cricket works.
Yep, I think that's a good actionable step, is to reach out to any local cricket clubs that might be in the area.
Oh, the only concern that I have reaching out directly to like just the regular cricket clubs is that they don't have, I mean, a lot of them don't even realize that blind people can play cricket, and that, exactly. That's an unfortunate thing. Even though they have come all the way to the U.S., the thought process still hasn't evolved as much where they think that a blind person can play, so they don't know the possibility of how a blind cricket is played. That's the only thing that you would run into. So you would definitely need somebody blind, like Ikram, Mujib, or me, or somebody else to make sure that, you know, we can reach out to them for help and assistance and equipment, but as far as showing how the game is played, that's not necessarily going to be the same experience that you would get with blind cricket.
We were fortunate enough also about a year and a half ago that one of the main teams, or one of the professional teams in South Africa called the Titans, the Saita teams, professional Saita teams, we got to play a 10 over side exhibition match against, they bought a TV show, a sports show here, and the players that played, many of them have represented South Africa at international level. general, including Mark Boucher. Mark Boucher played many, many games for South Africa. So he lost his eyesight in his one eye during a cricket match where one of the bells jumped up and hit him in his eye. So he's now partially sighted as well. But he is the current South African national coach, regardless of his eyesight. And what we got out of it, we the guys had to play with the blockout glasses on. We're fortunate here that we have simulation glasses, B1, B2, and B. It's not 100% accurate, but it gives a sighted person a basic idea of what it's like to have one of those impairments. And each and every one of those players afterwards came out and said it was the most difficult form of cricket they'd ever played. Played at the international level, they'd faced guys that bowled 150, 160 kilometers an hour, and they couldn't hit a ball that was coming at them at 80, 90 miles an hour or 80, 90 kilometers an hour because it is so difficult to play this game. What we've done is because of that, a lot of our training sessions are at site labs, and when they are sighted players, we tell them they're welcome to come in and have a bat and face a few balls and try it out. And the response has been absolutely fantastic. We've gotten so much more support from sighted players once they realize how difficult this game is to play and the different skill levels involved.
Create an email list, Yahoo or Google Groups.io, and that way you could start a group of all interested persons and share and communicate information. So that would be one of my suggestions to help this project move forward.
Thank you for the suggestion. Yeah, thank you guys so much for coming. This has been great. Thank you our guests for coming and anyone else who participated. And thank you, Michael, for helping us run this today. Thank you so much.